Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Oliver Friesen, CEO of Golden Metal Resources. Welcome back, Oliver.
Hey, gents, how you doing? It's not very long ago we spoke, but it's good to catch up again after the Garfield news today.
Indeed, yes. So obviously, GMET just reported high-grade copper, silver, and gold mineralization at the Garfield project. The ground exploration confirms the presence of significant large-scale skarn and porphyry-type copper, silver, and gold mineralization. The mineralization extends over a broad area, suggesting Garfield's potential as a Tier 1 copper deposit. Laboratory assays of 32 rock samples show extensive high-grade copper, with several samples exceeding upper limits, necessitating further analysis. You expressed and emphasized the project's promise and plans to update the market on further developments. It sounds like good progress there, Oliver.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Garfield, from day one, has continued to deliver. I mean, to think that 2.5 years ago, we had, I think it was 3 or 4 claim footprint. That's what we acquired to what we have today. I mean, the story is really just getting started here. So it's a great asset. You know, copper is a metal that I'm particularly interested in with the green revolution. So it's great to get exposure to a really fantastic looking asset in the gold metal portfolio.
Great. So from the point of view of the copper itself, tell us a little bit about the results that came of.
Yeah, so it's important to remember what we're looking for here. And we referenced there, and Phil, you mentioned it was the porphyry and skarn type mineralization, right? So this is, porphyry deposits are some of the most important sources of some of these metals in the world. Porphyry deposits are typically very large, high tonnage, I guess slightly lower grade compared to maybe a high-grade gold deposit or high-grade silver deposit, epithermal. So, you know, when we're looking at a porphyry and a skarn type system, there's a certain kind of threshold we're looking for. But the real thing that we're interested in is the scale or the size over which these rocks and these samples are covering. And we do highlight that in the RNS. We talk about the footprint now that we've covered with rock samples that exceed over 1% copper, which is a very, very attractive copper grade. So, and then just to see the gold and silver kickers, I mean, I've worked on a lot of porphyry deposits. I'm from Vancouver originally, and British Columbia is very much a porphyry province. So it was kind of where I, really kind of cut my teeth in the industry, was working on these type of systems. And to see, 2-3 gram per ton silver and, 0.2, 0.3 gram per ton gold was a great kicker. You know, people got really excited about that as a kicker for these porphyry deposits. So to see, over limit gold greater than 1 gram, and then silver up to, make sure I get the number here, but 37.1 gram per ton silver. I mean, these well exceed kind of what are typical kickers. So we have the high-grade copper, very large footprint, and then the gold and silver are just a nice sweetener as well.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm right in the figures, we're talking about 0.5 kilometers by 1.5 kilometers, are we, in one of the situations?
Yeah, that's just one of the zones as well. That's at the high-grade zone. So we've established a very significant footprint there. And then when you kind of just step out a little bit and you look across the whole project, that footprint grows quite significantly. So, we have some sub-zones that look for fantastic, but just overall, the Garfield project is really shaping up to be a special one.
Yeah, just explain the difference between porphyry copper and VMS type style copper, for the audience so they understand what it is we've got.
Yeah, so porphyry deposits form by the sort of an intrusion or a big body of magma intruding into the subsurface. And as these big plumes come up, they release fluids off of them, and these fluids can kind of migrate up and form these deposits. VMS are formed in a much different environment. They're typically much lower grade. They actually form, funny enough, in the seafloor, at the seafloor spreading site. So they're forming at the bottom of the oceans right now. They're typically higher grade, but much lower tonnage. So, like I said, porphyry deposits are some of the most important globally. You look at, the Chile, Argentinas of the world. These are some very significant porphyry belts up through Canada, North America. There's a very significant porphyry belt that extends from sort of Arizona up into Nevada, obviously where we are, and then up to Idaho, British Columbia, and Yukon. So there's a very significant porphyry belt. That's why the context of this is really important, because, we're not looking for porphyry somewhere where, they're not found. I mean, there's significant copper deposits in the Walker Lane mineral belt, and many of those are porphyry. So we're in the right neighborhood. We're seeing the footprint that we want to see. The grades are fantastic. So yeah, check so far.
Yeah. And how important is it at this moment in time when, you know, you've got the likes of First Quantum in Panama, where I think Panama ordered them to close that mine. And I think that supplies something like 5% of all the world's copper. So just how important is it to shore up?
Yeah. So, I mean, just in terms of where copper's going, it's funny. I you know, I follow a lot of different kind of market commentaries and people who are very well known. And obviously we have, you know, the gold bulls, we have the lithium bulls, we have all the different bulls that, you know, really kind of latch on to different metals. I would say the one metal that's almost synonymous across the board is copper. Everyone can sort of admit here and knows the importance of copper as we electrify the world. So copper's always been one that, you know, lithium might get hot and then get cold, or, you know, all these other ones. And obviously tungsten's one we're really focused on, but copper is one that is just synonymous across the industry. So to have a fantastic copper opportunity, it is really exciting for us at Golden Metal. But
so porphyry systems tend to be lower grade than the VMS, but significantly more volume. So from the point of view of having a porphyry at more than 1% in certain parts, this is pretty epic, no? Because, I mean, you look at the grades in Chile or in South America, we're talking about 0.25, 0.3, 0.4 at best. So how much copper equivalent do you think is even a good estimate to talk about when you've got the add-on of the gold and the silver?
Yeah, and it's really the grade, and that's the reason that I think we were so upbeat and buoyant in our RNS is to see those grades and those kickers. You know, as you mentioned, especially as a lot of these big deposits start to be depleted, you know, don't quote me on this, but the average copper mineable grade now in the world is probably in the order of 0.3 to 0.5%. That's kind of the average now. And as these big deposits and some of these larger, higher grade deposits continue to be mined out, I've seen charts which show the head grade as it continues to decline as we progress in time here. So, you know, that's what these big companies are looking for now are these high grade porphyry deposits. And obviously more work to be done here. But like I said, you know, to see over 1% consistently across that footprint. And then with the gold and silver, I mean, that's just fantastic. And then just, the point you mentioned there, Kev, about the copper equivalent, what I'll do is I'll probably hold off here. Obviously, we have quite a few samples in the lab here that are being run for over limit, including a couple gold samples and then a handful of copper samples. So once we get those over limit results, what we can do is we can actually publish in the follow-up RNS where we do that calculation just to show what a copper equivalent looks like. But you know, just for reference, 1 gram per ton. Actually, I won't comment yet. Let me get those results back. Let me get the over limits. But obviously, plus
don't
1 gram per ton. And then, you know,
don't answer the question because I know it's market sensitive. But I mean, ultimately, with some gold and some silver added to that copper equivalent, you know, we could be talking about 1% across the board porphyry style asset, which is like, yoo-hoo, this is like amazing scenario. So tell me how the American government are into this as opposed to the tungsten, as opposed to the lithium. Obviously, the gold is not a critical metal, but from the point of view of these things being critical metals, how does copper stack up in terms of the American thing?
Yeah, so it depends on what department, which is funny enough. So obviously, the Department of Defense is very keyed in on tungsten for a lot of the reasons we've discussed on previous pods, which is why, you know, our Pilot Mountain asset is so exciting. But copper is one that's of particular interest, as you can imagine, to the Department of Energy. So the DOE, which has very, very deep pockets, actually recently, I think within the last 3 to 4 months, added copper to their critical minerals list. So I think that really just signals to the market here how important copper is and how important copper is being viewed now in the eyes of the U.S. government, in particular the Department of Energy, which is, as I mentioned, a very significant department within the U.S. So what this means now is that copper opens up to potentially receive all of, you know, similar funding that's available through the DOE and other departments. So I think it just signals where copper's going and how important it is becoming. And especially as these mines continue to get depleted, you know, copper is something that we're really going to be, you know, already right now, you know, Robert Friedland, if you follow him on Twitter, I mean, he's banging the drum about how important copper is and how underweight the world is in copper and how many more copper discoveries we're going to need to kind of fuel this green revolution. So things are really changing, and to see the DOE officially include that into their criticals minerals list, is a really important step in the right direction.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems to be that the, I mean, and maybe it's just because we're dealing with a lot of them, but that there are a lot of copper discoveries, okay, in the companies that we're dealing with. We can talk about African Pioneer, we can talk about Aterian, we can talk about Galileo, and there's many, many more. But they're not huge, huge production of copper that the majors are really looking for, because a lot of those don't exist and take 10 to 15 years to come into production. So if you were sort of had a look forward, how long would this whole process take? I mean, on some of the big mines, the copper mines, you're talking 10 years to get it in production. What sort of timescales, if this all checks out, obviously, and it's a long way from that yet, but if it all checks out, what sort of timeframes are we talking about?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, Kevin. I mean, what I would say is, first of all, I'll point to the fact that Garfield is located in Nevada. There's a reason that we've focused the whole portfolio in Nevada, because it's the top-ranked mining jurisdiction in the entire world. So that means that when we make significant discoveries and when we continue to find things like we're finding at Garfield, it allows us to really push forward our agenda without, you know, interference from the government. So Nevada, it's such a great place to work. I really can't emphasize that enough. So first of all, we are in Nevada. Important thing to consider here. The other really important thing, and you know, I've mentioned this multiple times, but I don't think many people have sort of really clocked it, but as we continue to push these things forward, it's going to become more and more important, is the fact that every single one of our assets is located on what's called BLM ground, which is the Bureau of Land Management. The BLM ground in the U.S. has by far the simplest and most efficient permitting possible. The other type of land, well, there's a few different types, but the two main ones are Forest Service and BLM. I've permitted stuff on Forest Service. It's an absolute nightmare because you deal with a whole different agency. But BLM, I mean, you can get drill permits in 2 to 4 weeks. I've never worked in any jurisdiction in the world where you can get permits that quickly. So it just means that, once again, as we're pushing this thing forward, we're not going to be sitting around waiting for permits or waiting on the government to get back on these things. So, you know, that's kind of just, it's some important data points for listeners. But in terms of the actual timelines to bring these things into production, you know, the reality is, you know, if you continue to prove up, especially if you're looking for copper and a porphyry copper at that, you can continue to prove up the prospectivity of these type of projects. I mean, these are the kind of things that majors really look at. And like I said, they're looking to kind of replenish their copper reserves. So, you know, the typical timeline, like you mentioned, is probably 10 years, maybe a bit longer for a real large kind of tier one deposit. But oftentimes a major will come in earlier days, take it off your hands, and they can play that long game, whereas the junior mining space isn't as good at waiting that kind of time scale. So all we can do is continue to push the narrative forward as quickly as we can. Obviously, there'll be some next steps here. We'll have some of the over limit results coming out hopefully soon here, which should really hopefully show the scale here and more importantly, the grades that we're seeing. And then just continue to go from there and figure what the next steps are to continue to unlock value here and push it up the value chain.
Yeah, so your job really here is to push it up the value chain. The chances of Golden Metal Resources becoming a major copper producer is highly unlikely, and there is going to be some serious value accretion along the way as you push it up that chain. So yeah. We look forward to seeing what happens. And all the other things, I mean, to remind people, we've got the Pilot Mountain tungsten, not titanium, tungsten, okay? Just they both begin with T, and I do struggle in my brain with it. We've got the lithium and hard rock lithium, I think, not the brine, or is it?
No, it's brine. Right.
Okay, brine. Lithium, yeah. Brine. And we've also then got the Carlin-type gold system there in Nevada as well. So, yeah, I mean, there are so many opportunities for you. And I think if you took just each one of them, they could represent a small cap company on AIM. And there's no doubt about that. So to look at you now as a 6.6 million or 6.7 million pound market cap, I think is a bit foolish, to be honest, in terms of the valuation with what's been added, you know, since you came to market on my birthday. So yeah, very interesting. And we look forward to hearing more news from you.
Yeah, sounds good, gents. Appreciate the time. Let's definitely catch up again soon. We'll continue to push across the portfolio. And like I said, move these things up the value curve. That's my job. So I'll continue to do that.
Oliver Friesen, CEO of Golden Metal Resources. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, gents.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.